PCJ Radio International presents the longest-running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Pehon.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to another edition of the program. Very nice to have you with me for the next 55 minutes or so. And this is the last regular program for the month of December. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I'll explain that after we listen to our first song today, From Me to You, not performed by the Beatles, who had a hit with it, but rather the Johnny Mann Singers.
If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do, just call on me and I'll send it along with a from me to you. I've got everything that you want, like a heart that's oh so true. Just call on me and I'll send it along with a from me to you. I got arms that long to hold you and keep you by my side. I got lips that long to kiss you and keep you satisfied. If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do, just call on me and I'll send it along with love from me to you. I got arms that long to hold you and keep you by my side. I got lips that long to kiss you and keep you satisfied. If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do, just call on me and I'll send it along with love from me to you. Love from me to you.
From Me to You, the Johnny Mann Singers, I should say, a song that is from an album that they did made up of songs by the Beatles. Well, at the beginning of today's program, I said this is the last regular show for the month of December. The reason being because of the two Christmas specials and the special year-end program, which is coming up over the next 3 weeks. So, on December the 13th, we're going to have our pre-Christmas show. Then on December the 20th, our Christmas show, because Christmas this year falls on a Friday, so it's a few days before. And then our year-end special, which is going to be on the 27th of December. So special programs on the 13th, 20th, and 27th of December. This week's show is, actually, it's completely unplanned. Something happened last week that was very, very surprising. And I will tell you about it in a minute, or a few minutes, after we take a listen to another song, because I want to put as many songs at the beginning of today's program with as little talk as possible, because there is going to be quite a bit of talk. It's Ray Conniff and his singers, so another singing group, with A Spoonful of Sugar.
Oh, Mary Poppins is her name. Oh, Mary Poppins is her name. She flies through the air with her umbrella. If you get a chance to go, you ought to try to see the show. You'll hear this song, it's one you're sure to know. Whoa, a spoonful of sugar, down the medicine, go down. The medicine, go down, medicine, go down. Just a spoonful of sugar, down the
medicine goes down. Medicine goes down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in the most delightful way.
A robin feathering his nest has very little time to rest while gathering his bits of twine and twig. Though quite intent in his pursuit, he has a merry tune to do.
A spoon full of sugar, Ray Conniff and his singers. And maybe we'll have another singing group towards the end of the program. Anyway, I hope we will. Now, for those who have listened to this program on a weekly basis or know a little bit about yours truly, you will know that I worked at China Radio International for a number of years. I've told you about some of the odd experiences there. And I told you about some of the programs that I did. I hosted a weekly jazz program on the domestic service. I also hosted the 2-5 slot on the domestic service, which was at, what was the frequency again for Beijing? For Beijing, it was 91.5 FM. That's it for Beijing. And then it aired on a number of FM and medium wave frequencies around China, including a couple of shortwave frequencies that were going to Tibet. Now, most of the programming that I did at CRI was for the domestic side, but I also did some programs for the international service, programs that were for syndication on radio stations in Europe and North America. And every so often, because when people would take holidays, you know, they would ask an announcer, oh, can you fill in for this show or fill in for that show while whoever is away? So I had to do that myself. The first ever replacement job that I had to do for one of the shows that had somebody away was actually September the 12th, 2001. September the 12th. Now you're thinking, well, wait a second, that sounds like September the 11th, 2001. Actually, it was, because in Beijing, it was the day after when the attacks happened. They had happened in the evening time, at around 8 p.m. local time in Beijing. So we actually managed to get it out for the morning show. And I'm just going to run a small clip for you of that program.
China Radio International.
Good morning, everyone. It's September the 12th. The year is 2001. Today we present special coverage of the terrorist attack that took place in New York City and Washington last night, which began around 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Two hijacked commercial jets slammed into the 110-story World Trade Center in Manhattan just before 9 p.m. last night, Beijing time, and the two buildings collapsed about 1 hour later. Another hijacked plane struck the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. All the government buildings around the Pentagon were evacuated, and many government buildings in the U.S. today, including the post office and libraries, are closed. A fourth jetliner.
Well, that was the opening of Real Time Beijing, a show that I hosted for 1 week as the replacement host while the regular host was away on holiday. And the first show actually was to do with the World Trade Centers in New York getting hit by two airplanes known as 9/11. The other person that was on the program was an American journalist who had arrived at China Radio International 9 months before I did. Her name is Jocelyn Ford.
Information. Apparently, reports are coming in that some U.S. embassies around the world have closed and some have been given permission to close.
It is up to each individual embassy. We do not yet know about Beijing. However, the U.S. embassy in Tokyo has said it will not be open for business today. Embassies elsewhere in the world are also closing down, especially in the Middle East. Also, there are reports about what will happen next in U.S. airport security. Airport security will certainly be scrutinized. There will be a lot of soul searching. What some experts are saying, the terrorist targeted
American journalist Jocelyn Ford, who I worked with at China Radio International. Anyway, today's story goes this way. Last Friday, after recording last week's program, I walked out of the studio and I just headed outside for a breath of fresh air and to go to the coffee shop across the street and order a latte because I still had some recording to do that evening. And I was just, you know, checking around on Facebook. And lo and behold, by accident, I discovered that Jocelyn Ford was actually here in Taiwan. We hadn't seen each other for, well, since 2008. We had spoken a number of times. Now, for those who listen to our weekly news magazine, Focus Asia Pacific, the weekly edition of the show, and also the daily version, will know that Jocelyn Ford has been a freelancer for us for quite some time now. But we actually haven't, you know, we don't have much of a chance to sit down and hash old stories or anything. So, the day that I called her up on her Beijing number, which was still working here, she was leaving the following day. So I'm like, well, when, what time are you leaving? She was leaving at around 3 in the afternoon, Taiwan time. So I thought, you know what? I should go out and see you before you leave, because I don't know when we actually, you know, sit down and have a chat again. So that's exactly what I did. So I headed to the Banqiao train station at approximately 9:45 in the morning. And, well, that's the sound of Taiwan's high-speed rail before it departed from the Banqiao train station to Taoyuan, which is located in the same place of the Taoyuan International Airport. It's only about, 5-10 minutes away by taxi. Now, I took the high-speed rail, even though it is actually very close to Banqiao. The reason is, if I'd taken the regular train, it would be approximately 25 to 30 minutes. The high-speed rail, on the other hand, traveling at a speed of 248 kilometers an hour, arrives in 9 minutes and 25 seconds. So I did arrive approximately 1 hour before Jocelyn did, which gave me an opportunity to check to see what was around the train station where we can actually meet up. And it's an odd thing because Taoyuan has a train station, but the high-speed rail doesn't stop at that train station. It stops at a separate station, and both of them are not even close to each other. Now, Jocelyn, of course, was in the city of Taichung, which is around 228 kilometers away, so she also was taking the high-speed rail. We did find a cafe, but it was a little bit noisy inside, and had a lot of people, a lot of noise, you know, and it was quite warm as well, because we're now going into the season where the temperature drops, but, well, that weekend actually was rather hot, and the air conditioning wasn't on. So we decided to sit at a nearby park outside, and we decided to talk about our experiences, shared experiences, from our time at China Radio International. Now, for those who listen to CRI on a regular basis, you will find this rather interesting. It was a lot of fun.
So, Keith, I remember the first I knew about 9/11 was when you called me into your apartment and said, watch this on TV.
That's right. It was around, if I'm not mistaken, just after 10 o'clock at night, Beijing time. I'd fallen asleep in front of the TV watching BBC. And they did a report that an airplane had hit the Twin Towers, and then another one hit the Twin Towers. And then I called you, and because I was helping that week on Real Time Beijing, and I said, we have to do something. And you were sleeping. You were sleeping. I remember that.
I seem to recall I would not have known about this had you not reminded me, because we had to get up at 4 in the morning to go out and do this darn show. It went on air live at 8.
Mm-hmm. And I remember that I told you that I was going to head into CRI at that moment to see if I can get somebody on the phone to record some bits. And we managed to do that. The newsroom was kind of surprised that I would go in to cover it, because they said, oh, it's not really that important.
Is that what they told you that evening?
That's what they told me that evening, because their newscasts, which were still going out to Europe and Africa, they still hadn't... There was no mention of it. There was no mention of what happened in New York. And I said, there's no mention. They said, oh, it's not important.
Well, I remember, I believe I went out on the streets and started doing man on the street, person on the street interviews. The intention was to run them. I'm not sure if that was the next night or...
That was the next day. That was the second program, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, the first program, I mean, I remember coming out. So that was a funny week because all of our bosses were out of town. I was a co-producer on the show. I had a Chinese national producer, but he was on vacation, so were all the other bosses. So I just did a news show as I would in any other, for any other news organization. Came out of the studio and said, okay, how are we going to move the story ahead for the next scene, the next program? And they said, what? And I said, you know, who do I speak to here? And they said, oh, our boss is at a meeting. I said, oh, the boss is at a meeting about about the attack on the Twin Towers, right? And he said, no, I don't think so. And I was like flabbergasted. And I said, and then one of the young reporters said, you only think this is big news because you're American. And I said, no, this is going to change the world.
Mm. Just like, for example, the way Paris is now starting to change the world with things. But it was really odd. I remember even in the newsroom, after we did that program, they did mention it in the 9 o'clock news that followed us. But it was almost just, it was like a 20-second story. And then they went on to other things. And I remember, I don't remember who was on news shift that day. And I said, maybe... should be longer, and they said, oh, because we don't have an official word yet about what we should say.
Well, I was a bit naive at the time. I thought news was news. I didn't realize we had to wait for the president of the nation, Jiang Zemin, to give the go-ahead before we could broadcast what appeared to me to be a huge news story. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I was still a little naive, even though I'd been there for about 9 months. And it really taught me an awful lot, the difference of when you as a news person are serving your audience and what information you think they need or want, and when you're working with a state that tells you what they think is news. I mean, that really, more than any other experience at the news station, crystallized.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really... I somebody asked me the same question. I said, it's almost like we weren't serving the audience, but we were serving the masters.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, it was crystal clear, because the one of the other newscasts, I called New York and said, look, that we had a correspondent in New York. I said, we need to know how many Chinese were injured or, you know, God forbid, some were deceased. And he said, oh, well, the consulate here isn't giving us information. I said, well, you really need to go out and get that information. He said, why? And I said, oh, my God, that's, well, look at our audience is people in Beijing want to know if their relatives in New York are safe.
Right. We should also mention, in case somebody doesn't know this, but CRI has two services. There's the domestic service, which was on various FM frequencies around China, which real-time Beijing aired on. And then there was the external service. And the vast majority of the audience for the domestic side was actually the Chinese.
And it was fascinating to me that people, you know, our own correspondents never ever considered the needs of their direct audience. So this happened to me again when I called the correspondent in Pakistan. I said, well, so what's the reaction among of Chinese traders in Pakistan? And he had never thought of that. And I think it really actually served a purpose, because this was news for our correspondents that actually your show should care about their listeners.
Well, I remember when I contacted our New York correspondent, they told me, they said, well, they didn't have time to do anything because they were writing an article for a CRI magazine. And I should mention, the CRI magazine was read only by in-house staff and other government officials. I ended up having to call a friend of mine, Gloria, who lives in Manhattan, that has worked for as a freelancer for organizations like the Christian Science Monitor and others. And, you know, it's interesting, Jocelyn, when I listen to that show, I think I'm the only one that now has a copy of it. When I listen to it, considering we had no budget, no resources, a staff, well, I mean, there's morning music shows that have a bigger staff. It doesn't sound too bad.
Glad to hear it after all these years. You know, oftentimes I think when you're putting together a show, it's really more the thought that goes into it. It can mm-hmm. be more important than the actual resources. So the fact that we, you know, I thought it was a duh moment that, of course, this is a huge news story, but obviously for the rest of China, it wasn't. In fact, I heard later, I do believe there was one late night TV show on state TV, CCTV, that had run the news before we did. But otherwise, we may have been either the first or second.
If I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly, I think we were the first ones in English, mind you, not Chinese, but to go nationally with the story. I think we were the first ones, because China National Radio and Radio Beijing, which is a local station in Beijing, they still didn't have anything even at 9 o'clock or even that afternoon.
No, they had not yet been told that they were allowed to cover this. I mean, we have to remember this is in the days before the internet was so widespread, so mm-hmm. that information was not that easy to come by in 2001 in China, unless you had a, you know, shortwave radio or something like that.
Mm-hmm. The other funny thing we were just mentioning it a moment ago was, after the program went out and we were summoned to the principal's office, you know, I couldn't. The reason why I was laughing so much, because it was just so completely ridiculous. I could never think, we have to come to the office, we have to discuss this. I think the reason why they were upset was not that we did it, but the fact that they didn't think about it first.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you.
No?
There. No, because what happened was, on the weekend, I went to the local church and did a feature story about what people around the world in Beijing saying.
That's
and
right.
It was a human interest approach to a hard news story. And
right,
that was
right.
quite new for them. In fact, the correspondent in New York listened to that, and he said he thought it was a wonderful piece and he learned so much from it. Well, the rest of the station, or at least the muckety-mucks up top, didn't seem to think that was such a wonderful piece. And I was told that was one of the reasons we were called in, was that that was not an approved way of handling news. And I recall that I said, well, they said somebody complained. Right. And I said, oh, well, who?
Who? We both did. Who complained?
And they just said, we don't know, right? No name was given. A person in the audience. And the assumption was that it was somebody within the organization.
Yeah.
A political position. But anyway, that was funny. They refused, because I recall trying to get that information out, you know.
We didn't just ask once. I remember you asked a number of times.
Yeah. Yeah, because I really needed to know how to respond to that person's complaint. But then it is quite clear that it was a political issue and that I was in the doghouse. And I said to them, you know, maybe you need to take me off the show.
Yeah.
Because maybe I'm not the right person for this. And because our show was a real breakthrough, before that, China Radio International, before I came in January, and we probably started up in March or so. And before that, China Radio International, since 1989, had not done any live news programs. Because in 1989, one of their announcers went on the air and told the rest of the world to support the students in Tiananmen Square. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, obviously the consequences, that person later moved to the U.S., I was told, and became a business person of some sort. But as a result, the station stopped broadcasting any news live.
That's right. And CRI, when I joined, because the show had only been going for a few months, they I don't even know if they still have it, but they had a show called CRI News and Reports that was a 30-minute news magazine. And that was for the international service and also for domestic service. And that used to go out at 7 a.m. Beijing time. Famin was the presenter on that. And that one was also done live. CRI News and Reports, she used to go to the studio and do it at 7 o'clock for the U.S. But she only started doing it live just at the same time that Real Time Beijing went on the air.
Okay, so yeah, I don't quite remember that one being live. I thought that was still pre-recorded.
The editions that came after 9 o'clock in the morning, those were re-edited versions of the 7 o'clock one.
Okay. Right. So basically what happened was, in Chinese style, they not only decided to have a live news show, but they decided to have the first foreigner, me, be broadcasting news live.
Remember the pass? The A pass?
And signing your name in when you run into the studio, you've got to sign your name in first. And, you know, I remember a lot of tension at that self-criticism meeting, because when we came out of it, others said, look, it was a huge breakthrough not only to do the first live news show, but to do a livelier news show. We did it in a U.S.-style drive-time radio format with music interludes and sports and social news, and it was a lot more interesting, livelier, entertaining, shall we say, than the traditional news and reports that was the voice of the state and very somber. And so I had other reporters coming up to me saying, Jocelyn, don't ruin this for us. If you go too far with your program, they will take it all off the air and we'll lose all that ground that we've gained so far this year.
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, it also showed them a way. And the reason I mentioned that, we talked about this earlier, because it wasn't too long after 9/11 that the U.S. invaded Afghanistan to capture Osama bin Laden. And I remember the day of the invasion, like a lot of U.S. wars, they try to do it during primetime hours for the best TV coverage. And they started doing live CRI coverage at 9 a.m. Beijing time, which was 8 a.m. Eastern time. And they continued that to, I believe, 11 o'clock or 11:30. And you know what? They didn't ask you. They didn't ask me. They didn't ask any of the other foreigners at CRI to help with that program. I still wonder why they did that. Or they just thought, okay, we have to show that we can do it to our higher echelons.
Or maybe we were too much trouble for them and they wanted to avoid.
Or we would say, well, you know, you shouldn't be putting this in because this is not confirmed.
I don't remember. Do you have a copy of that show still?
I have a copy of half of it. I still have a copy of half of it.
How does it sound?
Dry.
Okay. Did they try to reach their correspondents around the world at least? And
well, the section of the program that I have is Dear Lin Xiaowen, reading news notes that were coming from Xinhua with audio clips that were taken from CNN and BBC.
Stolen.
That was it, because they did speak to two CRI correspondents, the one in Washington and the one in London, but they really didn't speak in depth. And what was also interesting is, now that show was also going out live, but the interviews that they did with the correspondents had been recorded 2 hours prior to air, and they didn't do any updates during the show. So when they had the Washington correspondent on the line from Washington, they'd spoken to them before the U.S. troops started invading Iraq. So then 1 minute, Lin Shawen is saying, U.S. troops are now invading Afghanistan. And we then spoke to our Washington correspondent. And then she says, well, they're planning to invade. I mean, it was really humorous.
Ouch, 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 ouch. Well, look, things have come a long way now. And we, you know, Chinese media is just like night and day. We're talking ancient history in terms of Chinese developments. And let me mention the reason. I actually thought up the name Real Time Beijing as a joke. Because at the time, news was neither in time or timely. A lot of it was pre-recorded, and a lot of it was not real. So I, you know, real time was sort of a trendy word that was just coming in. The internet was just developing that way back then. And so I was actually on a bus on the way home for Christmas, that right before I was due to come to China, and I thought, yes, this will be the name, Real Time Beijing. Wahaha! I wonder if anyone will ever get it.
You know, it's funny about that, because there was a British television show many, many years ago, and the name that the writers and actors in the show gave to the series, and it became the title, they called it At Last the 1948 Show. And it was in reference, because they said, you know, British television was stuff, they would come up with an idea, they would shoot it, and then maybe 20 years later it would be on the air.
Okay, well, I'm glad to know it's not just China.
And then, but at the same time, when I joined ICR, there was Real Time Beijing, and then I started doing a show called Real Time China that was exported to radio stations overseas. And what was her name? Xu Huajin. She said, what's the name? And I Real Time Beijing was playing in the background. I said, we'll call it Real Time China.
I had no idea that's how it was.
That was it, yeah.
Okay, okay. Well, you know, the Wall Street Journal now has a Real Time China column, but of course I had the name a long time before that.
Yeah, it was an interesting place to work. I found it a very interesting place to work.
You know, I must say that to this day, some of my best friends in China are from, or my colleagues from those days. Most of them have left, not all of them, but most of them have left. And the one who is there is the one who came in as a young student the year I was there. We trained him up, and for me, he was like night and day.
Liao Zhibo. I still talk to him every now and again when I see him on Facebook. And he told me a very funny story. And I also heard this from a friend of mine who was just in Taiwan, who works on the Thai section of CRI. He said, it's funny. Chinese government blocks Facebook. But he said, we're told to use Facebook to put the stories. I said, well, how do you do it? He said, we do like everybody else in the country. We use a VPN to get around the Great Firewall, which is, it's odd, isn't it? I mean, this is how I explain what China is. They say, you can't do it. You can't do it this way. You have to find a way to do it.
Yeah, well, at the same time, China has become much more adept at using strategies used by other countries. It'll block the strategy for its own people, but they will try to appear, you know, sugarcoat the propaganda, shall we say, at times, to get their message out and look like they're hip and cool and using social media. But it remains highly controlled, despite the fact that that social media may give the impression of not being as highly controlled. So.
Well, something that I found interesting is that since we were there, which is quite some time ago now, friends of mine who still work there, they say actually now there's more control than there was when we were there.
You know, the China is like a zigzag line. So things get better, they get worse, they get better, they get worse. I believe the overall trajectory is going in a very positive direction, to be frank. I mean, I find young people much more aware about the world and much more able to talk logically and not always as emotionally as before about global events. That once, you know, you would have said, oh, it's just because you're American, that's why you care, or you are the enemy, et cetera, et cetera. I find that more people now are able to look at me as a human being as opposed to perhaps a spy for the U.S. government or whatever they used to think that.
Did you ever think they thought maybe you were a spy for the CIA?
Absolutely.
But you don't look it.
Well.
That's the perfect kind, actually.
No, I was the first foreigner in the Prime Minister's press corps in Japan, and I was also one of my colleagues there when we were having dinner at an exclusive restaurant, a Lyote they call them, with the Prime Minister's secretary. He suggested right in front of everybody this would be a perfect place for a U.S. spy. So it's not that, you know, I think any time you are the sort of person who works in different countries, some people will come out of the woodwork and say, well, you must, you know, you've managed to get yourself into these interesting positions, you must be a spy or something like that. But I'm furthest from it, so
I don't know if you, it's funny you mentioned that, because when I arrived at CRI and people had asked where I'd come from, where I'd been living before, they never said it, but I always felt that they were somewhat maybe suspicious. Not with what they said, just but how they said it, kind of a suspicious... That's what I felt. Maybe I was wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, actually felt... my colleagues at China Radio International were the best I'd ever had, to be frank. I mean, I'm completely honest. They remain good friends to this day. I enjoyed working with them. They were reliable. It wasn't sort of like the rat race you sometimes find in other media organizations I've worked with a lot of competitiveness among colleagues and et cetera, et cetera. Whatever that means. I do think that that was sort of a special time in Chinese media history when China Radio International was sort of cutting edge. It no longer, I'm afraid, is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really changed a lot. You know, they have a show now that I'll listen to when I don't have anything better to do. It's called The Beijing Hour. And it's the strangest thing because it's produced by the domestic service, but then they broadcast it overseas. And if you're an overseas listener and know nothing about China, first, information is taken out of context. Second of all, why would you give entertainment news about Taylor Swift or you know, news from like TMZ and other websites for a radio station overseas to an audience? It's very strange. It's very, very strange.
Yeah, well, I think media is a work in progress, but a lot of media in China, I mean, there's some excellent reporting being done by Chinese journalists for Chinese publications. It's not always allowed to be published, mm-hmm. but there are some excellent journalists in China, and you know, it's a totally different media scene, mm-hmm. but there are still relics like what you've just mentioned, where people haven't quite figured out who their target audience is, what they should be doing to meet their needs, and what their special role in world media should be. Mm-hmm. So,
well, Jocelyn, actually, it's funny because we haven't seen each other so long now. Almost 2006? Since I left Beijing. And just by accident, I read on your Facebook wall that you were here in Taiwan. And that's why we ended up meeting, because you're very close to the airport. So I caught you on your departure, which is actually nice. And hopefully one day you'll be coming back again very soon. But you used to live here. You used to play French horn
in the Taipei Philharmonic Orchestra for Guo Meizheng. She was the conductor at the time. Yes, my claim to fame, I guess.
Well, nice seeing you again, and hopefully we'll catch up again very soon.
I do hope so. I've enjoyed my stay here immensely.
My good friend, Jocelyn Ford. And we were speaking there about our time together at China Radio International. Jocelyn arrived 9 months before I did, and I was there for just over 5 years, and Jocelyn left after about a year and a half or 2 years. Anyway, I hope that gives you an insight of some of the lunacy that we had to work around in the CRI newsroom for both the domestic and international service. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed that. It was a lot of fun, and We actually have another guest coming on the show very soon again of somebody else that I worked with at China Radio International. And I'll tell you about that next year. Oh, I can say that now. Next year, because next year is only a few weeks away. It's only a few weeks away. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, that there is going to be some special Christmas programs coming up. And that's for the next 2 weeks. And then after that, we're going to be... what are we doing again? Oh, yes. We're going to be... I've completely lost my train of thought. Yes, and then, of course, after the two Christmas programs, regular annual New Year's program. And what are we going to do this year? Well, you'll have to tune in and find out. So I think maybe now we should have a little bit of Christmas music. At least one song today. At least one song. It's Jose Feliciano and Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad. Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom.
Jose Feliciano and Feliz Navidad. And you'll be able to hear more Christmas music next week and the week after, including our annual stories. And if you don't know what they are 'Twas the Night Before Christmas and How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And that's in 2 weeks' time. And next week we have a lot of music for you, so do tune in to that. You're listening to Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Our email address is pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. Now time for Angela Lansbury and B. Arthur with Bosom Buddy from the original stage recording of Mame.
We'll always be bosom buddies, friends, sisters, and pals. We'll always be bosom buddies. If life should reject you, there's me to protect you. If I say that your tongue is vicious, if I call you uncouth, it's simply that. Who else but a bosom buddy will sit down and tell you the truth? Though now and again I'm aware that my candid opinion may sting, though often my frank observation might scald. Meaning to tell you for years, you should keep your hair natural like mine.
If I kept my hair natural like yours, I'd be bald. But darling, we'll always be dear companions, my crony,
my mate.
We'll always be Orphan Annie and Sandy, like Amos and Andy. If I say that your sense of style's as far off as your youth, it's simply that. Who else but a bosom buddy will tell you the whole stinking truth?
Each time that a critic has written, your voice is the voice of a frog. Straight to your side to defend you, I rush. You know that I'm there every time that the world makes an unkind remark. When they say Vera Charles is the world's greatest lush, it hurts me.
And if I say your fangs are showing, mane pull in your claws, it's simply that. Who else but a bosom buddy will notice the obvious flaws?
I feel it's my duty to tell you, it's time to adjust to your age. You try to be peg of my heart when you're Lady Macbeth. Exactly how old are you, Vera? The truth.
How old do you think?
Oh, I'd say somewhere in between 40 and death.
But, sweetie, I'll always be Alice Toklas if you'll be Gertrude Stein. And though I'll admit I've dished you, I've gossiped and gloated, but I'm so devoted.
And if I say that sex and guts made you into a star, it's simply that. Who else but a bosom buddy will tell you how rotten you are?
Just turn to your bosom buddy for aid and affection, for help and direction, for loyalty, love, and forsooth. Remember that. Who else but a bosom buddy will sit down and level and give you the devil, will sit down and tell you the truth.
Angela Lansbury and B. Arthur with Bosom Buddies, from the original stage recording of Mame. It's a shame, actually, that when they made the movie, they made it with Lucille Ball. I think it would have been much better if they had made it with Angela Lansbury, but that happened a long time ago, so there's no point to dwell on it. Anyway, we're going to be leaving you very, very soon, but I just want to remind you again the dates of those special programs that we have coming up. This was the last regular edition of Happy Station for 2015, because the next three are some special programs. On December the 13th is our pre-Christmas program. December the 20th is our Christmas program. And then the 27th of December, our annual New Year's program, the program that will end off the year. And then, of course, we will return on January the 3rd with a regular program. Yes. What do we have on that? I don't know. At least the next three are sort of more or less done. But I'm not going to tell you too much about them. You'll just have to tune in to find out what is going to be going on. Now, if you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program or have any suggestions, comments, or anything, or wishes, or, you know, it's very easy. Just send us an email, pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. And by the way, very, very soon, you'll be able to see the annual video that we upload at our website, pcjmedia.com, where we wish a number of listeners around the world season's greetings from the past year. And that video will be at our website very, very soon. It's something that we actually have been doing every year. The names always change, so you'll have to see if your name is there this year. All right. Now, today we had, at the beginning of the show, two singing groups. We had Johnny Mann and his singers, and then we had Ray Conniff and his singers. So we're going to end with another group of singers. This time, Charlie Steinman with his singers and Life is Short, Realize. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Pellon wishing you well, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.